Pop Spotting 120.
Friday, September 2nd, 2011.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
And it's Feedback Friday where you take the lead.
So once again, we lead off with the Pop Spotting voicemail.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, this is Jeff Gentry, X-Force 11, calling in with a film suggestion. I've heard you mention that you've seen some of Bogart's films, and I wanted to suggest one of my favorites from the Bogart and Bacall era. It's Dark Passage from 1947. It's an interesting thriller-type, mystery-type movie, and it has a great cast. In addition to Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, there are some great character actors and actresses in there, including Agnes Moorehead, more famous for Bewitched, playing Samantha's mom there. But it is an interesting movie, and it's interesting in its cinematography of how the first half or third of the movie is filmed, which is interesting in how they did it. Now, these days and age, it's not that interesting, but for the time, it was an interesting spin on things. And I really enjoy it, not only because of the mystery in the cast, but because of the chemistry between Bogie and Bacall. It's one of those movies that you can really see the chemistry between the two of them, and it's one of my favorites. It's underrated, I guess, because people think it's gimmicky or whatever, but it is a good film noir movie, and it's definitely worth checking it out. So I just thought I'd pass that along. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks very much for your call, Jeff. And how about that, Jen? Dark Passage, you're the classic movie buff.
I really love Bogie, and I love most of his films, but this is one I have yet to see. I do love The Big Sleep, and there are a lot of other Bogie films that I enjoy, so this is on the queue.
It's added to the list. Now, it was directed by Delmer Daves. He was also behind a lot of other well-known films, including 310 to Yuma, A Summer Place, and he was a writer of An Affair to Remember, or otherwise known as A Love Story. So really good pedigree there. We'll check it out. And moving to a more current film, we heard from Dave, aka The Interdave.
He writes, after listening to Pop Spotting number 111 and your review on The Big Lebowski, I was motivated to finally watch the movie myself, and all I have to say is, wow, what a ride.
All right.
It reminded me of one of those films where the group of main characters are just trying to get someplace but get sidelined by crazy things happening around them while meeting a bunch of unusual characters along the way. I'm sure there's better examples, but Harold and Kumar in the recently released Take Me Home Tonight come to mind. The dude was just trying to live his life, man. My favorite character was that of Walter Sobchak because of how ridiculously over the top his personality was, and I could tell John Goodman was having fun playing him. I also love the extreme use of the F word, like it was an inside joke by the filmmakers. I now know why this movie is such a cult classic. Thank you for recommending it.
I love it. And in fact, my friend Clay also watched The Big Lebowski for the first time. We're still waiting on his review. I'm glad that there are still some people who hadn't seen it. I'm glad he appreciated the use of language there. Now that you described it as epic poetry, I can get into it that way. Now, we also recently reviewed the movie Crazy Stupid Love, and Cheryl in LA chimed in on Facebook.
She writes, thank you for your review of this delightful but not perfect movie. I was enticed to see it a couple weeks back because I'm a huge Ryan Gosling fan. Mm-hmm. I was introduced to him when my girls watched a local Canadian silly teen series several years back. Perhaps his expressions and acting were limited here, but I still enjoy every minute he is on screen in any film. He is sexy beyond his looks. I am also so impressed with Emma Stone. Her gawky, engaging laugh is a thing to behold and is truly infectious. The plot twist was so fun and unexpected enough. Carell can be hard to take in large doses, but he was real in this role and gave a heartfelt performance. I constantly struggle with Julianne Moore to like her, but she was always a superb actress and held her own again. Yes, The Babysitter and The Son were both superb. Overall, the movie was a lot of fun.
Yeah, again, I mean, it was a surprisingly enjoyable film. I think and a lot of people, and I would agree with how she's describing it, Steve Carell didn't ruin it. Emma Stone really, really was a wonderful treat in that
girl
film.
Crush.
Absolutely. So, and I was just reading the latest Entertainment Weekly, and they picked the winners and losers for the summer. And under loser, they listed America, because America was a loser for not going out and seeing Crazy Stupid Love. So a lot of love for that film. Moving on to books, we heard from Peter B., who emailed, "I listened to your top five picks, Jen. Steinbeck, pretty good. Catch-22, not bad at all. Wuthering Heights, well, gee, just the wrong sex for that one. But when we got to number one, you picked the best book of all time. Well done, Jen."
Oh, thanks.
"Fan of you guys from the last three Lost seasons, and I would like to recommend one book to Jen, that being Sweet Thursday by John Steinbeck. I know that you will love it, most likely more than East of Eden. Ryan, as for you, come on, get to reading anything by John Irving. Thanks for the podcast, guys. Enjoy the island."
Thank you, Peter.
And what about that book? Have you read Sweet Thursday here on Feedback Friday?
I have heard more than once that it is one of his best and incredibly underrated, so I will get on that.
Absolutely, and unfortunately, making reading recommendations to me is, as Jen knows, a futile exercise.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I can't keep up with the blogs and websites that I like to track, let alone getting into books anymore. Meanwhile, on Facebook, both Nancy and Pete said that Owen Meany is their favorite book of all time as well. Good taste. And Bonita said that it's definitely one of her favorites, too. On the blog, we heard from Al.
He writes, "I loved Owen Meany also. Irving's book, The World According to Garp, was also an entertaining and intense read. I know you're not a big sci-fi fan, but if I had to come up with a book from the last generation or so that has some parallels to Meany in story, pathos, quality, and in some cases characters, it would be The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell. While not as well written as Irving's book, this was Russell's first published. This story of first contact with a truly alien culture by a team of Jesuits is full of surprises and insights. I think Sparrow predated Meany by a few years, so I think the parallels are interesting but not intentional. I'd love to hear your thoughts if you get a chance to pick this one up."
And in fact, Al wasn't the only person with that book in mind. Dreamy B replied on the blog, "I was going to say that I loved Owen Meany too and then recommend The Sparrow. Weird. I never would have thought to compare the two though, and I have to take issue with The Sparrow being considered inferior writing to anything, John Irving or not. To be fair though, it has been a long time since I've read Owen Meany. I love Mary Doria Russell's writing. Her characters are wonderful and still break my heart on a regular basis if I let myself think about them, and it's been almost 2 years now since I read The Sparrow." Have you heard of either the author or the book?
I haven't heard about it, but I think I'm sold.
Yeah, it certainly sounds great, and if it's a little sci-fi, I'd probably be interested in it as well. Michael N. from Wisconsin chimed in via email and said, "Just stumbled upon your site and I love it. You asked for favorite books and I must chime in with two authors I just love, Rother Zelenzy and his Amber series and Orson Scott Card's Alvin Maker series. I would love to see an attempt to bring either of these to the screen. Both are long and take place over many years, so I would think a television miniseries would be the best way to tackle it. Read anything by either author and I think you'll both see are excellent writers. Card is better known for his Ender books, but I think Alvin's Alt History of Young America is more accessible." Any knowledge about these books or authors?
I had a group of friends in high school that were really big fans of Orson Scott Card, but he's an author I really don't know anything about, and I think if I do start with him, I might start with the Ender series.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because I had friends who really, really enjoyed the Ender series as well, but I think Michael N. kind of hooks me with the idea of an alt history of young America. I mean, I'm not even sure what that means, but it's interesting sounding enough that I might look it up, or at least I would hope some other of our book-loving listeners will look up as well.
Our good friend Greg writes on the blog, "No, Jen is not the last person on Earth who hadn't yet read Harry Potter. I may finally take the plunge when the ebooks are published. I've been hesitant to take up Harry Potter because Harry bears a striking resemblance to Tim Hunter in Neil Gaiman's Books of Magic.
Right.
But how about some non-fiction titles? The Rest is Noise by Alex Ross is one book I've given as gifts to friends. I really got into it because I love the subject matter, modern classical music, but Ross writes in a way that would make anyone curious about the music he covers. Also, Appetite for Self-Destruction by Steve Knopper. It's a comprehensive history on how major labels put themselves in a position to be decimated by the internet. Far better than Greg Kot's Ripped."
Well, it's always good to hear from Greg, and yes, a big fan of Neil Gaiman. In fact, when I knew him back in the early 90s, in the early days of the internet, in fact, he built one of the first websites devoted to the author, even had some contact with the author, so trust me, he knows his stuff. But The Rest is Noise by Alex Ross. I know you've read that one.
Yeah, I read it earlier this year, and I loved it because I didn't know anything about the subject matter. It covers from the early 20th century through Germany pre-war and into the rock era, and it was just fascinating, and it was one of the best books I've read all year.
I really believe it. And then what about the other book, Appetite for Self-Destruction? I mean, you almost said Appetite for Destruction. Still on your mind from Wednesday's epic show, but have you read that one by Steve Knopper?
I haven't read it, but it is on the list because that is a fascinating subject also.
All right. Well, moving on from books to television, we talked about Dexter. And on that review, Jen here in Honolulu wrote on the blog, "I love Dexter. I can't wait until October. Hurry up, September. Move it." And, well, I certainly agree. The premiere is going to be on October 2nd. Not that we have premium cable, but we might have our ways. I should also mention that the trailer for the upcoming season has been online for a while, and it looks pretty enticing. If you don't want to know anything about the upcoming season, you might want to skip about 20 seconds ahead, but in terms of the actors that have been named and depicted for the upcoming season, they include Edward James Olmos, yes, from Battlestar Galactica, and Colin Hanks. What do you think about that?
Admiral Adama, I am so in. And if this is what it sounds like and he's going to be a villain, I can't wait for that.
I think that is great casting. And continuing on the Dexter theme, we heard from Crystal on the blog.
She writes, "I am so looking forward to seeing season 5. My first Netflix DVD should be in the mail today. I think John Lithgow was my favorite nemesis. Maybe it was the reminder that he really is a true actor. I'd forgotten he could play the dark side. And if you liked Lila, then you'll surely love Alice on Luther. I really like how Ruth Wilson plays her. And I love Luther. Can't wait till they film more episodes."
Well, certainly no argument on Luther. It was a recommendation from Dez, and we did burn through that first season. We loved it. And of course, we did compare, you know, Lila and Alice and some of these really, really engaging but slightly creepy and crazy female characters. That's a winner for sure. Still waiting to get to season 2. But Dexter, she says she's just starting season 5. We just finished it just a couple of days ago. We just caught up to the series before the new season starts. And without ruining anything for Crystal, I mean, nothing's going to stop her from watching it. But how did you like season 5? How did you like the arc that we got for Dexter?
It was a very solid season. There were so many things about this season that I enjoyed. But I thought that this season's baddie was not the best one.
Well, you know, I had that same feeling that the baddie, the main nemesis for season 5, is probably at the bottom of the list of all of the baddies, but that doesn't mean we disliked him. We didn't think that it was awful. It just wasn't the strongest because there have been so many more. But the very end, the very final, you know, episode of Dexter season 5, you were clutching your pillow and you were screaming, or you're saying, "Don't do it, don't do it." So that's always, to me, a good sign of a good season finale. Well, continuing the Dexter talk, Pat on the blog writes, "I was intrigued by your question on who could be considered a favorite nemesis, and my answer is someone you omitted from the overall show, Harry Morgan. Harry is one of my favorite characters on the show, not only as Dexter's foster dad in flashbacks, but as the avatar of his dark passenger, the part of Dexter that wants to kill. Often he'll be seen in the front seat with Dexter as he drives. I think it's important that we see this dark side of Dexter separate from Dexter, because I feel that in many ways, Harry really, really messed Dexter up. Although there was a great deal of Harry's code that was necessary for Dexter's survival, there was a certain amount of him saying, 'Dexter, you'll never be normal. Dexter, you'll never be human. You can't hope for a better life.' My wife and I have conversations that center on whether Dexter really is a monster, or if he is as bad as a monster as Harry thought he could become. Is Dexter irredeemable? The Dark Passenger might say so, but the Dark Passenger's existence depends on Dexter's full faith in Harry. That's why I put Harry up as Dexter's biggest nemesis, which really is a cop-out on my part, since it's like saying Dexter is his own biggest enemy." Well, we didn't really talk about James Remar, but certainly an important character. I'm not sure if I would count him as a nemesis, though.
I think Harry is partially responsible for the way Dexter turned out, because Dexter is not a monster. Dexter has a good heart. We see so many examples of that, especially this last season. He does so many things to protect the ones that he loves. I think Harry really could have contained the homicidal urges that Dexter had if he had really wanted to.
Well, I certainly agree, though, that, I mean, he's critical to who Dexter is, and he is either in, you know, in some cases egging him on or even just helping ramp up the tension, which may or may not be what Dexter needs at that moment. I did say on the blog, it was a great conversation, because one of the things that I didn't get to say, because we left out Harry Morgan and James Remar, fantastic actor, is that my problem with his character is sort of the same problem I might have with Dr. Melfi in The Sopranos or with Saul in Breaking Bad or any other character that's a confidant or at least someone who can't, you know, spill the beans, or in this particular case, someone who may not even really be there. I think that unfortunately for writers of a TV series or even a movie, these characters can sometimes become a crutch. These characters can somehow be written into a scene because it's convenient to allow the protagonist to have a conversation and talk out their feelings or their motivations or re-describe what's happening. And that's sort of one of the things that I kind of have a discomfort with Harry Morgan as a character, but still certainly someone that deserved a prominent mention in any conversation about Dexter. Closing things out, a really interesting television comment coming from our friend Stella in the Philippines. In fact, she sent a wonderful long rundown of her favorite TV series, both American and British. On the American side, she compared Burn Notice and White Collar. She writes, "The premises are very similar. Hot, charismatic lead actor, Jeffrey Donovan in Burn Notice or Matthew Bomer in White Collar, gets karmic payback, fired from the CIA or thrown into jail, but gain redemption by working on dangerous assignments within a certain radius of their city, Miami or New York, while hanging out with awesome older dudes, Bruce Campbell or Tim DeKay, who may have screwed them over in the past. The differences end there, though, so it depends on your mood. For example, Burn Notice is your show if you like voiceovers, accents, annoying moms, sexy ex-girlfriends, and running jokes about C4. On the other hand, if you like Rat Pack-era outfits, multi-layered characters, surprising casting, cold office spaces, and a surprisingly effective Tiffany Thiessen as a sympathetic but troubled housewife, White Collar may be your cup of tea." So thanks, Stella, for that great comparison between two very similar shows. I mean, maybe we should ask her to do an analysis between Psych and The Mentalist in the future. But in any case, I don't know about White Collar, but we have watched Burn Notice.
Yeah, we've watched a few episodes, and I really got the feeling that there were a lot of jokes and things that happened in previous episodes that I didn't really understand. So I think it's something that we might have to watch from the beginning.
Well, I remember, I mean, I like Jeffrey Donovan, but he seemed a little stiff to me. He kind of struck me like he was a little too David Caruso for me to really get into. I did like the narration and sort of having that perspective. It's very Dexter-like in that way. I think the strongest part of that series was Bruce Campbell, the scruffy older dude, for sure.
He's hilarious.
And I think we must have jumped in because there was some real tension between the lead and the woman, Fiona, the ex-girlfriend. And I think that's why, I mean, I just really couldn't get into that relationship. I really couldn't really get into liking that woman.
I can't stand Fiona. That's the only reason I can't get into this show.
But we might give it another shot, and we might also give White Collar a shot as well. Thanks, Stella, for that. And just to kind of go down her list, she also mentioned The Unusuals on ABC, Leverage on TNT, and yes, Psych on USA. So I think maybe that analysis might be coming. And as far as her British shows, she mentions The IT Crowd, State of Play, and How TV Ruined Your Life. So if those ring any bells, we'd certainly like to hear additional votes in favor or against, because whether it's television or movies or music or books, you can imagine that our to-do list is extremely long, and it's really your feedback that helps us shuffle things up or shuffle things down. We need, in fact, to hear from you.
So please don't stop. Reach out. And if we haven't heard from you yet, what are you waiting for? We'd
exactly.
love to hear from new people here on PopSpotting.
You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net. You can leave a voicemail as well at 815-310-0808.
But we heartily encourage you to post on the Pop Spotting page on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting, where other listeners can see your comments and it can help start a conversation.
And you can start any topic you want there, or you can also post a comment on a specific episode on our blog at popspotting.net.
And you can also connect with us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting. Our personal accounts are Hawaii and Mrs. Hawaii, and we do spend a lot of time on Twitter.
That we do, and I, of course, spend way too much time on Google Plus as well. You can look for me there. We'll be back soon with more Pop Talk, but for now we want to thank Dan Pashman of the Sporkful Podcast for making our theme song.
And mahalo to you for listening. For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Hasta la vista,
baby.